A red pulsing object appears in the Enterprise's forward view screen. Spock peers into his scanner.
On Mark 8 and closing.
Steady as she goes. There's a crew standby.
Chekhov looks up from his controls at the con.
Penge 45,000 kilometers, Captain.
Fascinating.
Kirk glances from Spock to the screen.
Range 43,000 kilometers and closing.
Sensor readings.
A mechanical device of unknown properties. I read no life forms aboard.
Analysis, Sanson?
Obviously, it intends to intercept us. It has made several course changes corresponding with our own.
38,000 and closing. 35,000 and closing.
Unclear whether it intends to attack or merely communicate with us.
Thank you, science officer.
Kirk goes back to the captain's chair. The cylindrical object rotates and pulses red, yellow, and blue.
Come to 181 Mark 7.
Aye, aye, sir.
The object slips away to starboard as the Enterprise changes course, then slides back into view and hovers just ahead of the starship. Kirk resumes his seat.
Staying with us.
Indeed.
Full stop, Mr. Chekhov. Hold your position.
Aye, sir.
The Enterprise comes to a halt with the cylindrical object filling the forward view screen, changing color as it spins faster and faster. Chekhov and the helmsman exchange a glance.
Aliens.
Everyone looks up at the view screen.
You have encroached on the space of the Melkor. You will turn back immediately. This is the only warning you will receive.
Vulcan, Captain.
English.
It was Russian, sir. Every word.
No, Captain, it was Swahili.
Interesting. Telepathy.
Unquestionably. Most impressive.
Our orders are very clear. We're to establish contact with the Melkotians at all costs.
True telepaths can be most formidable, Captain, and we have been warned.
What previous contacts have been made with the Melkotians?
No recorded contacts. If they ever ventured into space, they evidently withdrew immediately.
Kirk gets up and turns to his black female communications officer.
Lieutenant? Hailing frequencies.
Tied in, sir.
Kirk addresses the screen.
This is Captain James T. Kirk of the Starship Enterprise, representing the United Federation of Planets. We have contacted your buoy and understand its message. We hope that you will understand that our intent is to establish peaceful relations with you.
Kirk glances back at Uhura.
Lieutenant, answer.
Nothing, sir. Clear on all frequencies.
Try again.
Still no response, sir.
Opinion, Mr. Spock.
I prefer being a welcome guest, Captain, but there seems to be little choice.
None whatsoever. Mr. Chekhov, deflectors of full intensity. Increase speed to achieve planetfall as scheduled.
Aye, sir. Standard orbit in 5 minutes.
The Enterprise slowly moves past the space buoy. It doesn't block their path or follow them.
Lieutenant Uhura, advise Dr. McCoy, Engineer Scott, to meet me in the transporter room. Mr. Spock, Mr. Chekhov, let's go find out what it is they're afraid of.
They step into the lift.
Captain's log, stardate 4385.3. We have transported down to the Melkotian planet and have encountered conditions which are completely contrary to what we were prepared for. Spock, what is this?
Unknown, Captain. Sensor readings give no indication of fog-like conditions in this area.
I knew it had to happen. It's a fine time for that transporter mechanism to break down.
Impossible, Dr. McCoy. My transporter was working perfectly. Then what are we doing here?
Tricorder readings, Mr. Spock.
Unknown, Captain. Unlike Mr. Scott's transporter, this unit is not functioning.
Then let's get out of here.
He takes out his communicator.
Kirk to Enterprise. Kirk to Enterprise, come in.
No use, Captain. Obviously, none of our devices will function.
They peer around at the enveloping fog.
Apparently, that Melkotian buoy...
Aliens!
The thick fog clears just enough to show a greenish reptilian head with a long neck and two glowing eyes.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Star Trek, created by Gene Roddenberry, starring William Shatner. Also starring Leonard Nimoy as Mr. Spock and DeForest Kelly as Dr. McCoy. Spectre of the Gun, written by Lee Cronin, directed by Vincent McAviti.
Our warning was plain. You have disregarded it. You shall be punished. You, Captain Kirk, the disobedience was on your orders. Yours is the responsibility. Yours shall be the pattern of your death.
We come in peace.
He draws his phaser.
But we'll defend ourselves if necessary.
You are outside. You are disease. The disease must be destroyed. Your plea has been heard, and sentence has been pronounced. It is done.
Kirk and the others find themselves in a stagey-looking Wild West street, their phasers changed to six-shooters.
Fascinating.
They look around. They're standing in front of a general store. Across the road is a saloon. The sky is dusky pink.
Where are we now, Captain?
Kirk's eyes narrow. Over the dusty street is a horse tied to a rail by a sheriff's office, but the office only has a frontage, and there's nothing behind it.
Spock, evaluation.
Obviously, this represents the Melkoshian's concept of an American frontier town, circa 1880.
It's just bits and pieces. It's incomplete.
Perhaps the Melkoshians have insufficient data about this era.
Or perhaps this is all they require to complete the pattern of our death.
And these, Captain?
Beautiful specimen.
Crude, but dangerous.
Whatever the Melkoshians have planned for us, it won't be pleasant. These could be useful. Just remember one thing. To individuals, close range. These could be as deadly as phasers.
In the midst of what seems so unreal, the harsh reality, this is not a dream.
McCoy taps his six-shooter. They look at a copy of a newspaper, the Tombstone Epitaph, pinned to the wall of the store.
October 26, 1881, Tombstone, Arizona.
Tombstone. Hell for leather right out of history.
But why here? And why now?
Captain, the Melkoth said you were the pattern. He looked into your mind and selected what he considered the proper time and place for our punishment.
Because my ancestors pioneered the American frontier.
Yes. The violence of your own heritage is to be the pattern for our execution.
What's the matter with us? We're talking like we really are in Tombstone, Arizona in 1881.
Precisely. In terms of what the Melkoths intend for us.
There's something about that date, October 26th, 1881. But what was it?
Ike!
A sheriff comes out of the office and greets them with open arms.
Ike! Frank! Billy! Tom! Ike, I was afraid you weren't going to make it.
Looks like we did.
Well, I knew you wouldn't let them scare you away. They're a bunch of hot air, if you ask me.
Are they really?
And now they're gonna have to fight after the way they shot off their mouths.
You know us?
Funny. That's what I like about you, Ike. You always see the funny side.
I'm a barrel of laughs.
Well, nobody can say Johnny Bean doesn't have a sense of humor.
Johnny. He called me Ike. You Frank, Bones Tom. And Billy?
Kirk's eyes widen.
Ike Clanton. Tom and Frank McClary. Billy Claiborne, Billy Clanton.
Captain, I pride myself on my knowledge of your Earth history. The names were known in the annals of the opening of the Western Sector of America. The United States of America, that is.
In the late 19th century in Arizona, two factions fought for control of the town of Tombstone. The Earps, Morgan, Virgil, and Wyatt, who were the town marshals, along with Doc Holliday.
And the Clanton gang. On October 26th, they had it out.
Who won?
The Clantons lost, Mr. Checker.
And we are the Clantons.
We are the Clantons. And if this is a replay of history...
History cannot be changed.
Kirk chews his lip. A fight breaks out in the saloon and a man flies out through the doors. As he draws his gun, a tall, thin, mustachioed man dressed in black comes out of the saloon and shoots him. The man looks across the street at the Enterprise crew in their Starfleet uniforms and gun belts and goes back into the saloon. They hurry over to the dead man. McCoy examines him.
It's impossible! Things like this can't happen!
Is this a dead man, Doctor?
Very dead, Mr. Spock.
That's one thing we can be sure of here. Death is real.
They turn at the sound and go into the partially built saloon set. Men are playing cards. A bartender greets them.
Hey, Frank! How are you, boys? I didn't think I'd see you again.
Billy! Oh, Billy!
A bar girl kisses Chekhov.
Billy, baby, I knew they couldn't keep you out of town.
Oh, you knew that?
Come on.
She leads Chekhov to a table. The man in black saunters past Kirk, McCoy, Spock, and Scotty. They follow Chekhov.
Maybe you shouldn't have.
And this up an opportunity to see you? Don't be silly.
He's taking crazy chances with Morgan Earpright in the same room.
Kirk looks at the man in black with the marshal's badge.
Yes, of course. The man who kills on sight. Morgan Earp.
Kirk stands. Morgan Earp steps forward and flicks back his jacket, clear of his gun and holster. The card players flee. Spock stands.
Captain, since we have seen that death is the one reality in this situation, I seriously suggest you reseat yourself immediately, without moving a muscle of either hand. If I remember correctly, that would involve you in what was called the fast draw. It initiated unfortunate events.
Slowly, Kirk and Spock sit back down at their table. The barkeeper comes over.
You boys want your usual?
Absolutely, half a gallon of scotch.
You know we ain't got nothing but bourbon, unless you want corn whiskey.
I wish it was all over. Ike, I saw Virgil out patrolling this morning.
Good old Virgil, we can always count on him.
They've been blowing off all over town how they chased the Clantons out. I guess you'll show them now, won't you?
Morgan Earp comes over.
I don't think we're gonna have any choice.
He grabs the girl.
You'll dirty yourself with this scum. Come on.
Get your hand off her.
No, Claiborne.
No. All right. Now, we don't want any trouble.
If you don't want any trouble, what are you doing in my town?
Just leave us alone, Mr. Earp. That's all we ask.
Five of you. You'd like me to draw, wouldn't you? All right. I will. Soon enough.
He backs towards the doors.
Soon enough.
Morgan Earp disappears through the swinging saloon doors. Kirk looks at Chekhov and sits back down with a sigh. The bar girl peers over the saloon doors into the street.
I believe he was actually trying to provoke a dispute with Mr. Chekhov.
Close, Ike. Lucky there wasn't two of them.
I guess so.
Sylvia's right. They've been bad-mouthing something fierce all over town. You boys watch it.
I assure you, sir, we shall watch it. And everything extremely closely.
Billy, you were wonderful.
Sylvia puts her arms around Chekhov's neck and kisses him passionately. He responds. Kirk and the others look on.
Mr. Chekhov.
Chekhov looks over at Kirk.
What can I do, Captain? You know we're always supposed to maintain good relations with the natives.
They kiss.
Young lady.
Kirk looks at Spock helplessly.
Young lady.
Yes, Ike.
I'd like to talk to Billy alone, if you don't mind.
All right. I understand. Billy Claiborne, you be careful.
She goes.
Mr. Chekhov, you be careful. Mr. Spock, except for our handguns, we haven't changed, not even our clothing yet. These people see and hear us as the Clantons.
I don't think that's such a bad thing, Captain.
The day is still young, Ensign.
All right, what do we got? We're here in Tombstone, Arizona, October 26th, 1881. The day of the gunfight at OK Corral. And we're the Clantons. And Morgan Earp has just gone off to tell his brothers that we're here.
And if this is indeed some sort of a replay of history, the Earps will kill the Clantons at the OK Corral at 5 o'clock this afternoon.
Scotty and McCoy exchange a glance.
Well, we're not going to be at the OK Corral at 5 o'clock this afternoon. You, bartender, Ed. You claim you know us.
I ain't making no big claims about it to nobody. Just so happens.
You take a close look at me.
Yeah?
Who do you think I am?
Ike Clanton? Who do you think you are?
Well, I know this is hard to understand, but I'm Captain James T. Kirk of the Spaceship Enterprise. These men are part of my crew. We're not really here. We're from the future. We haven't been born yet. Feel the material in my shirt. Now feel the material in your own shirt. Do you notice any difference?
No.
Do these clothes look like yours?
Not exactly.
Have you ever seen clothes like this before?
Sure.
Where?
On the Clantons. You Clantons are always great with your jokes. That's why we like you.
I'm not joking.
Only difference between you and the Earps is that they never joke.
I'm not joking. I'm not Ike Clanton.
It's okay with me, Ike. Anything you say don't make no difference who I think you are. Your problem is, who does Wyatt Earp think you are?
Kirk steps into the marshal's office where Wyatt is with his elder brother, Virgil. Morgan Earp is nowhere to be seen.
Good morning, gentlemen. My name is James Kirk, and I'm afraid there's been some sort of misunderstanding.
Clanton, I don't know what you're trying to pull, but we warned you not to show your ugly face in town again.
They eyeball each other.
Yes, of course you did, and I wanted to talk to you about
We're
that.
We're done talking, Clanton.
There's been some sort of mistake, a misunderstanding.
All right, Clanton, one more chance, your last. You've got until 5 tonight to get your horse-stealing, scurvy crew out of town. All the way.
Yes, we'd be glad to. We don't want to fight.
I always said you was yellow, Clanton.
Kirk turns to Virgil.
I'll make one more attempt to get through to you, Mr. Earp. My name is not Clanton, it's Kirk.
Oh, yeah. We heard the talk about your jokes.
I'm not joking.
Sure. Well, I'm glad to meet you, Mr. Kirk.
He thumps Kirk on the jaw. Kirk pins his arm behind his back, using him as a shield as Wyatt draws.
Draw, Clanton.
Not me, Mr. Earp.
You draw or I will.
No, Wyatt. Let me. When the time comes, I'll pay him for this.
Kirk looks at the two brothers.
We don't want any trouble. We'd be glad to cooperate.
5 o'clock, Clanton, is that clear? If you're in town at 5:01, we'll kill every one of you, whether you draw or not. Is that clear?
The two brothers glare at Kirk. McCoy dabs bourbon on Kirk's lip.
Manor, they call that stuff fire.
It's House Lightning, straight bourbon. Try some in small amounts. It was considered medicinal.
label it for external use only.
Well, it just takes a bit of getting used to, Captain. Actually, a man could grow quite fond of this stuff.
Take it easy, Mr. Scott. I hate to think what that stuff's doing to your stomach lining.
And your reflexes. We're going to need fast reflexes from now on. There's no negotiating with the herbs. We know that.
Aye. Oh, if we only had a phaser.
Or a communicator. It'd be a pleasure to watch those herbs as we beam back to the ship at exactly 4:59:30.
Could we make a communicator?
Impossible, Captain. In this century, there are no metal alloys or power sources to make devices such as ours.
The problem is clear, Spock. We're going to have to seek contemporary solutions. Where's Chekhov?
Mr. Chekhov is involved, Captain.
You shouldn't have come back to town, Billy. Morgan will kill you because he wants me.
With his outdated weapon. If he shoots at me, I will just step out of the way.
You can joke about it. I've seen him in action, especially Morgan.
A lot of people and things have tried to kill me. You'd be surprised.
Mr. Chekhov, I mean Billy, come along.
Yes, sir.
Billy, please don't even go near him.
Shall we?
Kirk and Spock give Sylvia a last look as they push through the saloon doors.
Where are we going, Captain?
To exercise the better part of valor.
They come to a sign saying Tombstone City Limits. Kirk pushes ahead. A force field jolts him back. He tests with his finger. Kirk turns and tries another direction, his finger outstretched.
Well, that settles that. The force field.
It is obvious the Melkoshians are not going to permit us to leave this town.
If we could only contact the Enterprise.
Yes, but where is the Enterprise?
Mr. Chekhov, if you were in charge of the Enterprise, what would you be doing?
I'd be using the ship's sensors, trying to locate us.
Very good. If we could find the place where we beam down, the ship might lock in and beam us up.
Well, let's get there.
There's no way we can know where it is, Doctor.
Be anywhere within a 1,000-mile radius, perhaps.
Mr. Spock, why don't you join us common humanoids in trying to find a way out of here and quit explaining why we can't get out of here?
We have until 5 o'clock to find that way. Now, consider this. What materials were on hand in 1881 could help us fight the Earps on their own terms?
We have these, Captain.
No, the Melkots gave us those to execute us. We have to find a way to put the Earps out of action. Is there anything that exists here and now that could help us out of this trap?
Chekhov thinks.
All those Western Cossacks had were poisonous snakes and cactus plants.
Bones. The venom. The plants. Can you make use of them?
A tranquilizer? Of course, Jim, I can make a tranquilizer.
I could make a device to deliver it on target.
First, Bones. The ingredients you require.
I know the place to get the proper drugs. I'll need a mortar and a pestle.
Check out mortar and pestle. How do you intend to deliver the tranquilizer on target?
I shall need some fusing and some cotton wadding.
Cotton wadding, try the apothecary.
Aye.
And I shall manufacture the equivalent of an ancient generating canister, more familiarly known as a gas grenade.
A sign on a door says, teeth pulling. McCoy steps inside. A man is in the dentist's chair, face covered with a towel.
I'll be about 5 minutes yet. You could come back.
Well, thank you. Mind if I look around a bit?
The barber-cum-dentist looks nervously back at his patient as McCoy examines the bottles in his cabinets.
Crude, but very usable.
I wouldn't touch that stuff if I was you.
Oh, you don't have to worry. I know how to handle this.
McCoy picks up another bottle.
I have an urgent need for a small supply of this drug, too.
That stuff ain't mine. It belongs to him. You'd better ask him.
Oh, so you're the dentist. Well, I'm a physician. I have a serious emergency. I wonder if you mind if I'd borrow a small quantity of this.
The man takes the towel off his face and stands up. He has a long moustache, curly hair, and wears a patterned waistcoat.
You want it now?
My name is McCoy. I'm a doctor.
That joke is all around town already, McClowry. Well, my name is still Holliday. Doc Holliday.
McCoy's eyes narrow as he tries to place the name.
Emergency is real. I need these things.
Your emergency sure is real. Go on, take the stuff. Have some more fun.
He picks up his bag.
Take my bag. Only best you be finished before 5 o'clock.
That is my intention, Doctor.
Because at 1 minute past five, you'll find a hole in your head right from this gun.
He displays his large caliber, double-barreled pistol menacingly. McCoy puts the two bottles in the bag Holliday flung at him and goes to the door. At the threshold, he stops and looks back at the infamous gunman and gambler before slipping away. Out on the street, Sylvia comes up to a store, sees that Chekhov is about to come out of it, and sits down on a bench by the window to wait for him.
Sylvia!
She makes room for him.
Hello.
Harry Claiborne, you know how crazy I am about you.
That's very nice.
Well, aren't you going to ask me what I've got in my shopping bag?
That's just what I was preparing to inquire. Have you been shopping?
Of course, silly. What else would I be doing on a beautiful afternoon? With the dance only 1 week away? Or have you forgotten that already?
No, I haven't forgotten. I am looking forward to it most eagerly.
You will be absolutely wild when you see me in the new gown I'm going to make. I found this most scrumptious material. Yards and yards of it.
She gazes at the material lovingly.
You know what I was thinking, Billy? I was thinking what a beautiful wedding gown it would make.
She looks at him.
Why don't we just turn that dance into a wedding ball? It would be so heavenly.
Chekhov frowns.
Married? I'm afraid that wouldn't be possible.
He walks away.
But I'm positive the gown will be ready. And what else is there to stop a wedding?
But it is absolutely impossible. I am not someone you can marry. If only I could make clear to you what I really am.
Do you think I don't know? Billy Claiborne, you are a cattle rustler and a horse thief, and I don't care what else.
Morgan Earp appears and pulls Chekhov away from Sylvia.
I warned you, Clayman, stay away.
Morgan thumps Chekhov on the jaw, knocking him to the ground, and takes Sylvia by the arm.
You don't have to take anything from that scum now while I'm here.
He hauls her away.
Mr. Earp! Get your hands off her.
Morgan hitches back his long black jacket to free his gun and turns. Chekhov, who's wearing two six-shooters, glares at him. Morgan's two brothers appear in the distance. Chekhov starts to walk towards Morgan, who draws his gun and fires. Chekhov pitches forward onto the ground. Sylvia rushes over to Chekhov. Morgan holsters his gun and looks round at his two brothers as they approach. Kirk and Spock run out of the saloon as McCoy and Scotty run up. They all gather round their fallen colleague. The three gunmen, dressed in black, look on as McCoy looks over at Kirk.
There's nothing I can do, Jim.
The three gunmen and the four Enterprise officers glare at each other. Wyatt Earp looks down at Kirk.
Come on, Clanton. Let's do it now.
Kirk stands. Scotty, enraged, tries to push past him.
Captain, let me.
No.
Yeah, come on, Captain. Let him.
Captain, we can't just stand here and take it.
Yes, we can.
But they murdered Chekhov. If you think I'm going to...
They're trying to push us into something we're not ready for.
And it is not yet our time.
The three brothers glare at them implacably. Later, Kirk stands at the bar of the saloon. Spock, McCoy, and Scotty sit at a table, fashioning the tranquilizer and the gas grenade.
Let her go, Jim. He's dead.
Maybe he wouldn't be if I hadn't ignored the Melcott warning.
We all knew the risk when we joined the service. I'll let it go. Gentlemen, there is one thing which requires the immediate attention of all of us. Specifically, our future.
But not this minute, Spock. It takes us a little longer.
I understand the feeling, Captain. You talk about another man's feelings. What do you feel, Spock?
My feelings are not a subject for discussion, Doctor.
Because there are no feelings to discuss.
Mr. Spock, Chekhov is dead. I see it now, and I can hardly believe it. But you work closely with him. That deserves some memorial.
Spock will have no truck with grief, Scotty. It's human.
Bones, Scotty.
Captain. Quite all right. They forget I am half human.
McCoy and Scotty look away, ashamed.
We don't have much time.
Captain, I vaguely remember the historical account of the famous battle in which we are about to engage, but I am confused.
About what?
Since each of us represents members of the Clanton gang, you, Ike Clanton, I, Frank McLowry, then Mr. Chekhov would be the other Billy, would he not?
William Claiborne, that's right.
But did not William Claiborne survive the battle at the OK Corral?
Everyone looks at him.
Get to the point, Spock.
Mr. Chekhov is dead, but in the actual gunfight, William Claiborne survived.
Yes, that's right. That means it doesn't have to happen the way it happened. We can't change it.
He turns to McCoy.
Bones, how's the tranquilizer coming?
I'll have it ready before Spock.
Spock?
Another hour.
And we'll have a tranquilizer grenade?
Not precisely.
Forget precision. Will it work?
It should.
Make sure it does, Spock. If we don't tranquilize them, we'll have to fight them.
And if we fight them, we all die. We know that.
Negotiating with them could buy us more time, Captain.
But not with the Earps. I've tried that. That's out. There must be a way.
He goes back to the bar.
History has been changed in the fact that Billy Claiborne didn't die, but Chekhov is lying there dead. That means there must be a way to change this time in history.
It would be worth a try, at least until we're certain of the device. Then perhaps we could quiet things down.
But not with the Earps. There is one other place I can try.
Kirk goes back to the sheriff, John Behan's office, and peers in through the window.
You looking for somebody?
Kirk hurries over to Sheriff Behan.
Yes, Sheriff. I want you to stop the fight.
Stop it? Who wants to stop it? I sure don't. You don't. You didn't yesterday.
I do now.
Since when does a Clanton run crawling to the law for help?
How else is he going to get justice?
From this! You and your boys set up this whole thing to take care of the Earps. It's a little late to decide you don't have the belly for it.
It's not too late. Sheriff. Sheriff. There must be plenty of decent people in this town who don't like the Earps. Let's organize.
Don't talk nonsense. The people in this town are counting on you to get rid of the Earps for them.
And the people better wake up and let the law work for them.
And talk that way after what the Earps did to Billy today. Nobody in this town will deny you your right to your revenge.
Kirk looks up at the sheriff.
Yes, I want revenge. I want to crush the life out of the Earps. I can't just kill them.
You listen to me. Get down to the OK Corral. Keep out of sight. When the Earps come looking, you bushwhack them.
I can't murder them!
There'll be no questions asked. Honest. I guarantee that.
Kirk regains control of his temper, lets go of the sheriff, and runs off. In the saloon, Spock, Scotty, and McCoy are assembling the gas grenade.
These crude supplies we were forced to use worked quite well.
I doubt that this combination of things was ever used for any purpose quite like this.
Perhaps they would have been if they'd had your ingenuity, Doctor.
Kirk comes back into the saloon. They throw him a questioning look.
Captain.
He shakes his head.
How soon will I be ready?
Right now.
Good. How long will it take the tranquilizer to have effect?
3 or 4 seconds.
How did you manage to test it?
It has not been tested.
It's not necessary, Captain. It's very simple. Nothing can go wrong. Up to now, everything has gone wrong. I want to test it now.
Would a volunteer solve the problem?
It would.
All right. On one condition, that I'm wide awake and with you at 5 o'clock.
Guaranteed.
All right.
Scotty goes to the bar, pours himself a stiff drink, and downs it.
It's to kill the pain.
But this is painless.
Well, you should have warned me sooner, Mr. Spock. Fire away.
Spock places the canister on the bar beside Scotty and pulls a wire tab. Smoke starts to pour from the canister. Spock pushes it closer to Scotty and comes back to the table where Kirk and McCoy are watching. Scotty picks up the canister and inhales deeply. Nothing happens. McCoy raises a puzzled eyebrow. Spock frowns. Kirk's face falls. Scotty continues to breathe in the fumes.
Should have worked. Did you inhale the gas, Scotty?
Aye, deeply.
You still feel all right?
Oh, never felt better.
No dizziness, no sweating, no palpitations?
It doesn't work.
Indeed, fascinating.
It was our last chance.
Spock frowns.
Captain, you don't seem to understand. It did not function, but it must function.
Nothing could go wrong, Captain. It should work.
A scientific fact. But if the tranquilizer does not function, which is clearly impossible, then a radical alteration of our thought patterns must be in order.
We need a weapon. An answer.
Don't have to worry about that now, Jim. Look at the clock.
10 minutes. And it's all gonna end at the OK Corral. Well, we're gonna wait right here until well after 5 o'clock. We're not gonna move from this spot.
Suddenly, they find themselves outside. There's a strong wind blowing. At their back, a sign over a gateway says, OK Corral. At the OK Corral.
Let's get out of here.
A force field stops them.
Scotty, bones.
They test for brakes. The force field is keeping them penned in the corral.
We're trapped. They got their way. We better stand and fight.
Good. If they want to fight, let's give them a fight.
They're experts at gunfighting. We don't have a chance.
Well, then we'd better become experts and fast.
That may not be necessary.
Spock, you've got something?
A fact, Captain. Physical laws simply cannot be ignored. Existence cannot be without them.
What do you mean, Spock?
I mean, Doctor, that we are faced with a staggering contradiction. The tranquilizer you created should have been effective.
It would have been effective anywhere else.
Exactly. Doctor, in your opinion, what killed Mr. Chekhov?
A piece of lead in his body.
Wrong. His mind killed him.
Well, come on, Spock. If you've got the answer, tell us.
Physical reality is consistent with universal laws. Where the laws do not operate, there is no reality. All of this is unreal.
What do you mean unreal? I examined Chekhov. He's dead.
But you made your examination under conditions which we cannot trust. We judge reality by the response of our senses. Once we are convinced of the reality of a given situation, we abide by its rules. We judge the bullets to be solid, the guns to be real. Therefore, they can kill.
Chekhov is dead because he believed the bullets would kill him.
He may indeed be dead. We do not know.
But we do know that the Melkoshians created the situation. If we do not allow ourselves to believe that the bullets are real, they cannot kill us.
Exactly.
I know the bullets are unreal. Therefore, they cannot harm me.
We must all be as certain as you are, Mr. Spock, if we're to save our lives.
Precisely.
That's not possible. There'll always be some doubt.
The smallest doubt would be enough to kill you.
We're just human beings, Spock. We don't have that clockwork ticker in our head like you do. We can't just turn it on and off.
You must. Spock, a Vulcan mind meld.
Very well, sir. Engineer?
Scotty follows Spock. In the marshal's office, Wyatt Earp picks up his gun belt. He goes to the door where he's joined by his elder brother, Virgil. Outside the barn at the corral, Spock places his fingers on Scotty's head and begins the mind meld.
Your mind to my mind. Your thoughts to my thoughts.
Scotty's brown eyes widen. Spock moves closer. Morgana waits ahead of his two brothers on the road to the corral. He falls in step as they come up. Meanwhile, Spock works on McCoy.
The bullets are unreal. Without body. They are illusions only. Shadows without substance. They will not pass through your body. For they do not exist.
They do not exist.
Further down the track to the corral, Doc Holliday waits for the three Earp brothers. He falls in step with them. Spock mind melds with Kirk.
Unreal. Appearances only. They are shadows. Illusions. Nothing but ghosts of reality. They are lies, falsehoods, specters without body. They are to be ignored.
The four gunmen walk in a ragged line towards the corral. Spock, Kirk, McCoy, and Scotty wait with their backs to a wooden fence.
Captain.
Holliday and the Earp brothers enter the corral. The four Enterprise officers don't move.
Draw.
Kirk puts his hand to his gun. The four gunmen open up. Bullet holes appear in the fence behind Kirk and the others, but they remain unharmed. The gunmen try again. The gunmen look at each other. Kirk and Wyatt Earp step towards each other. Kirk fells Wyatt with a flying dropkick. He gets to his feet, but Kirk knocks him down again. Kirk grabs Wyatt by the collar and cocks the hammer of his six-shooter. Eyes wide with terror, Wyatt Earp stares down the barrel of Kirk's gun. Kirk uncocks it and tosses it to the ground. Spock watches with one raised eyebrow as Kirk lets Wyatt Earp go. The other gunmen shimmer and vanish. Back on the Enterprise bridge, Kirk watches McCoy run a scanner over Chekhov's body.
Captain, I don't understand.
Neither do I. He's in perfect health.
What happened? Where have I been?
Right here, it seems.
But that girl, she was so beautiful. So real.
Do you remember anything else?
No.
Good. Perhaps that explains why he's here. Nothing was real to him. Except the girl.
Captain, the Melkoshian object.
The space boy appears in the view screen.
Sensor readings?
The object is beginning to emit M-rays of a highly unstable nature, Captain.
Lieutenant, sound red alert. Let's check off. Deflector shields on full.
Gun
crews, lock on target.
Energy output increasing beyond measurable levels, Captain.
Laser guns, stand by to fire.
The boy spins faster and faster, changing color. Then there's a blinding flash of light. Everyone looks up at the view screen. Chekhov's brow furrows.
It's gone, sir.
Damage reported, then?
No damage, sir. All decks report fully operational.
Captain Kirk, you did not kill.
The disembodied head of the Melkoshian appears against the background of stars.
Is this the way of your kind?
It is. We fight only when there's no choice. We prefer the ways of peaceful contact. I speak for a vast alliance of fellow creatures who believe in the same thing. We have sought you out to join us. Our mission is still one of peace.
Approach our planet and be welcome. The delegation will come out to meet you. Our warning threats are over.
The image vanishes.
Excellent. Lieutenant, cancel red alert. Mr. Chekhov, resume original course, warp factor 2.
Warp factor 2, sir.
Spock walks slowly over to the command chair where McCoy stands beside Kirk.
Captain, may I ask a question? You needn't answer if it seems too personal.
I'm sure I'll be able to give you an answer, Mr. Spock.
This afternoon, you wanted to kill, didn't you?
But he didn't kill, Mr. Spock.
But he wanted to, Doctor.
Is that the way it seemed to you, Mr. Spock?
Yes, Captain.
Mr. Spock, you're absolutely right. That's exactly the way it was.
Mankind ready to kill.
That's the way it was in 1881.
I wonder how humanity managed to survive.
We overcame our instinct for violence.
Kirk looks at McCoy out of the corner of his eye. The doctor nods with a crooked smile and goes off towards the lift. Spock gazes at his captain doubtfully. Kirk smiles as the Enterprise heads towards the planet Melkon. This audio description was written and produced at IMS for the Sci-Fi Channel.